Hi, welcome back to the Sci-Fi FX podcast number 118. Your host here, Matt McIntosh, and I've got co-host Carl with me. Say hello, Carl.
Hello.
And so I guess today, Carl, we are going to talk a little bit about some of the new stuff that's been coming out on TV lately. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and
Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even know where to begin with this. I want to jump into both of them right away, but I guess we got to pick something. So
let's start with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I know that's the one that everybody was, you know, really waiting for.
You know, and I got a kind of a theory about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I've heard, you know, different people say that they like it, and other people say they were disappointed in it, and blah blah blah. But you know, my theory on this is kind of a lot like it was with Star Wars. You remember when the second trilogy of Star Wars came out, and so many people were disappointed with Episode One, and you know, my theory then was, and I still look back and I actually like Episode One. There's some things about it I don't like and blah, blah, but that's beside the point. But my theory is that a lot of people had the same buildup of anticipation for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as they had for that. Was there stuff that could have been, you know, more spectacular? Yeah, but this isn't a movie. This is a TV series. Was there things that were... I didn't see a whole lot that was really, really super wrong with it. Did you?
No, I enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent. And yeah, I think a lot of the people that aren't enjoying it is because, like you said, there's just that huge buildup and hype to it because Avengers was so great and everyone liked it so much. But you've got to realize they've got to do, you know, 20 episodes a year on a TV budget. They're not doing a two-hour movie with $250 million to spend. They probably don't even have that for the entire 22 episode run.
Well, and not to mention, they introduced, you know, it was the beginning of a new show, so they had to introduce five new characters. They had to give what I'm calling the rebirth of Agent Coulson.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I didn't see a whole lot wrong with it. And I think standing on its own, if it had been released at any other time and there wasn't this big hype against it, I think that everyone would have said, oh, it's a decent show. Was it great? Was it, you know, spectacular? Was it, you know, Avengers the movie? No, it wasn't. and I'm not going to say that it was. But at the same time, did it suck? Was it bad? Was there things in it that... that made me want to turn it off? No. Do I look forward to seeing it again next week? Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Yes, I do.
I definitely look forward to watching this one again. It's not Avengers, it's not Iron Man, but watching it, it clearly had that same feel that I could believe it was in that same universe with those movies. It had the same kind of sense of humor that the Iron Man movies and the Thor movies have. You know, so it definitely felt like it belonged with them. It's just kind of, you know, the underfunded little stepbrother or something of it. But, you know, it looked good for a TV series. I mean, there was nothing. Some people thought that Lola flying off at the end in the hover car looked a little cheesy. Honestly, I didn't see that. I thought it looked fine, especially for a TV series. It's, you know, again, obviously they're not going to have the special effects budget that the big blockbuster movies got. They're not going to have like ILM or someone like that doing that effect. They're going to have some in-house effects shop doing it for them. But yeah, I thought the acting was good. I thought the writing was good. It's my understanding that Joss Whedon actually wrote the pilot. So it'll really come into the next two or three episodes to see if the writing holds up to his level of his standards.
Well, they're showing three different creators in the credits on IMDb. Now, what that's worth, I mean, Joss has got, you know, one credit. His brother is also listed in there, but is it Jeb? Jeb.
Yeah.
Jed. And then they've got is it Jed? J-E. Yeah, I guess it is D. Jed. So I'm hoping that he keeps his overtones and keeps that sense of humor in it and all that kind of stuff. But I'm with you. I didn't have a problem with the what I considered the fanfare to Back to the Future at the very end. I thought it was kind of entertaining because you knew there was something coming there. I mean, through the entire, through the series or through the episode, at one point he even said, he made the comment that old is good, but
New is good, but not always better.
yeah, and he made the comment that made me feel like there was going to be something more to the car, and so I wasn't really surprised when I seen it. Could it have been considered corny? I guess it could have been, but I don't know. I think things like that a lot of the time are. I mean, if that's what you're going to complain about, I mean, we're not complaining about, the a god coming to Earth. You're not complaining about the dude having a worm attached to his arm or a bug, a centipede attached to his arm and being able to jump out of windows and, hit. There's a thousand things you could have complained about, but I don't have complaints about any of them. I mean, I think that I thought it was a pretty good introduction show.
Well, and in all honesty, I have not read the Agents of or the Shield comic book. I'm not a huge Marvel fan as far as the little side things like Shield and stuff like that, but it is my understanding that Lola was in the comics and that she did have a hover mode like that. So that's actually staying accurate to the source material, which is what, we always harp on people about is, if the source material was good enough to be around for however many decades, go ahead and use that. It's obviously good.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with that. I like the fact that they at least threw that in there since it is in the comics and everything. And I hope they keep it up. I sat there and laughed my way through it and just truly enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent.
Well, and there was, you can go back through and pick some of the scenes they had in the previews. The only thing I was a little disappointed about is a lot of the previews were exactly the show, and I guess a lot of the hype came from them giving away at pieces of it a little here and a little there. And
Yeah.
as it ended up, they did give away quite a bit of the show.
That's true. But yeah, I mean, it had some really funny moments in it. It had some very tense moments in it, like where they're trying to talk the guy down before he explodes, and then he gets shot in the head. And oh,
Yeah.
spoilers, in case anyone hasn't seen it yet, but it's already aired, so too late.
Well, and if you're sitting here listening to us talk about it, then you were anticipating some spoilers anyway.
Yeah. So, but yeah, again, it was fun. And that's honestly something based off a comic book. I think it should be fun. It should have a sense of humor. You should also have the moments of drama and excitement and tension. But I
Now
think it needs a good sense of humor.
let's talk a little bit about the characters. I mean, because I was very intrigued by the I sit back and I think about it now, and they really did a good job of the introduction of each of the characters. I mean, if you think about each one of them, with the exception of the two scientists, you kind of think of them as a team almost at this point.
Yeah,
But
Fitzsimmons.
yeah.
I'm
I mean, if you think of each one of them, there's some comedy that went along with the introduction of each one of them. There's some unknown elements that went along with something that makes you think there's something more behind the scenes with them.
Oh,
And then,
I mean, there's a
but at the
reason Coulson chose each of these people to be in his team. So there's got to be he doesn't do anything without a reason. There's got to be something behind each of these characters that he sees in them as being, having the potential for greatness.
Well, and I particularly like the way he exposed, brought Sky into the whole group.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just that was just a different twist on it that you wouldn't
Yeah.
anticipate.
Oh, yeah.
But
Best
if
interrogation scene ever.
yeah, yes, it was. Oh, you don't believe us? Well, here, give a shot to your own guy and say, okay, ask him anything you want.
Anything.
He'll.
Oh, that was the truth serum scene was awesome. That was probably I think that was the high point of the episode for me.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So they left Sky with, this background that there's a lot of unknowns about her. You go to Coulson, you know that I'm anticipating that Coulson isn't Coulson anymore. And
Yeah.
big thing. I don't think he's actually Coulson anymore. I think he's either a robot or a cybernetic recreation or some kind of, and I'm not familiar enough with the source material to determine who it would end up being. But my guess is that he was never on vacation because they kept referring he can never know. I'm guessing that he.
I'm thinking he's some sort of replicant or a clone or, android, something that's got Coulson's mind in it. Something like that. But again, I don't really know the Shield mythos that well, so
Somebody will, and somebody will know it, and somebody will be able to tell us who they think he is. Because there is someone out there that I'll bet that's what it is. Melinda May. I mean, we know obviously nothing about where she came from, so that's going to be a complete surprise because it's obvious that she's no paper pusher.
Yeah, no, she obviously was a field agent and is rated in like every kind of motorized vehicle or transportation system there is. So, I'm sure we'll find out much more of her backstory as the series goes on. And honestly, I don't know if I want a fan of S.H.I.E.L.D. telling me what the deal is with Coulson. I kind of want that to be. I like being in the dark
Mystery.
about it. I want it to unfold and me to try and figure it out as the series goes on.
Well, I'll be interested to see who which character that it's theoretically it could be, because there's I'll bet, and if you go into that universe and you go into the Shield, backstory and stuff, you'll find that there was someone that could have been not necessarily Coulson, but another character that he can end up twinning as. That ends up being some kind of villain somewhere or something. I'm sure we're going to run into that. I just can't imagine not. And then we get to Grant Ward. I mean, obviously Grant is their work alone, go out, get the job done. I mean, the whole series starts with him, being told that the going and stealing a piece of
The alien
what kind of
tech,
tech
yeah.
the alien tech back is on a bus that they've posted the information on the internet, and he's like, well, if it was easy, then I wouldn't be here. But I mean, he's kind of their work alone kind of guy, and he's also the one that says what he wants to on Truth Serum.
Yeah, well, I liked the way that, they didn't just ignore the fact that the Avengers movie happened. It is very closely linked to that because they're still dealing with the fallout of the attack on New York, and he was recovering a piece of that alien tech. And
Now, I
then
thought for sure that they said these are going to be in the same universe and
yeah, it,
one is going to affect the other.
yeah, and most definitely. And the serum that the centipede thing is injecting into the people, that's that same stuff that was the big thing in Iron Man 3. So I mean, it's very closely knit to the movies, and I like that because it gives you something in that Marvel universe that's cohesive with the movies that they put out every year or two to
Yeah.
kind of hold you over between the big blockbuster movies. So I like that approach that Marvel's taking with this.
Well, and I guess anytime that you get this involved where you're mixing this many movies and a TV series and stuff, you have to get more fan. I think fans of TV and movies have gotten more and more sophisticated as the years have gone by, and we demand, that storylines tie together, that facts line up, that. With notable exceptions, obviously, but I mean, for the most part, I think overall we're more demanding than we've been in the past, and I think this is a sign of that. Now we're getting, multiple movies all clustered together, and now a TV series to go with it, and they still are keeping the continuity,
Yeah, and I mean
which.
that's they're basically making visual comic books, because comic books have been doing this for decades, where you have, the stuff that happens in the Iron Man comics affects the stuff in the Thor comics, and Thor's, because they're clearly in the same universe in the comics, and everything interacts and feeds together, and you have crossovers between the comics and everything. So I mean, this is just another extension of the way Marvel's been doing the movies, having it all be one cohesive universe. This just gives us, say, weekly view into that as opposed to yearly or bi-yearly.
Well, and not only that, but I think that Joss has a way of being able to tie all those details together and keep them straight enough to where they're acceptable to the fans. There's, some of these writers are a little bit sloppy and let things go that shouldn't happen and stuff like that. I mean, perfect example is, I'll defend the new Superman movie to whoever I have to defend it to. But the fact is, there were some things that were major slip-ups that should have never happened. And he has a tendency, Joss has a tendency to catch those little things. And you can see from this show that he's injected several of those things to make that level of complexity available to us so that we kind of, when we go back, and I mean, I went back and watched it a second time just so I could catch all the little things that were related to it.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, he had years of experience keeping his continuities straight with, Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. Both of those series, Angel being a spin-off of Buffy, where they were in the same universe and they had crossovers, and he had to keep everything, in line between both of those because they would impact each other occasionally.
Yeah.
So, he's got the experience of doing that. Now, it's my understanding after the first three episodes, I think it is, he isn't going to have a whole lot of involvement with the series. He'll still be the executive producer, so I'm sure he'll still have final say on anything.
Well, I don't think it's so much important that he is the creator of the content, but I think a lot like, I mean, and I look at this a lot like what's happened recently with Star Wars and it's important that he be there to make sure that all the little details are paid attention to and that at least the story lines up and that you catch those little things. Because it's those little things that are the difference between a good series. Sometimes it's those little things that are a difference between a good series and a bad series. But it's those little things in my mind that are the difference between a good story. Like, you have with what I consider Superman is mediocre to good, to a great story, which you have basically Avengers, where it's just every detail is spot on and everything is perfect. And then you add in all the Iron Mans and the Captain Americas and the Hulks and stuff, and it just all the details lined up. So
Yeah.
I'm hoping he'll be there to kind of at least fact check things. And even if his, And then, of course, with his brother is taking a big role in it too, I think.
Yeah, he it's my understanding that he him and I think if I remember hearing right that Marissa Tench
Marissa is the other one.
is I believe she is Jed's wife, if I remember right. I may be completely remembering that wrong, but they will basically be running the show after Joss steps away to deal with Avengers 2.
You're right. It is Joe's wife. It is Jed's
Oh
wife.
wow, okay.
And it says right on our IMDb page, married to Jed.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's my understanding they'll be the ones actually, like in charge of and running the series. Joss will still have an executive producer credit, so I'm sure he'll have veto rights on things so that things line up with the series, with the movies and stuff.
Well, she was also involved in Dollhouse, so she's got some experience working with him.
Yeah, exactly. Joss likes to keep it in the family. I mean, even with the actors, he always likes to reuse a lot of the same actors. As we see with the doctor in Shield was, Preacher Book from Firefly. I cannot remember the actor's name at this moment, but he reuses the same actors. He likes to use the same production team, and I think basically that leaves Joss as kind of the custodian of Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D., and that way he can keep an eye on things, whereas he doesn't have to have his fingers constantly in every pie. He's got people he can trust. But then if they have a question or an issue with something, they can come to him and he can be the final authority on it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good setup to have for something like this, especially with intertwining it with the movies, because he is linked in with Avengers 2, and I'm sure he's probably got some say in some of the other movies to make sure that they line up with what he's wanting to do in Avengers 2.
Now, the last two characters is the Leo and Gemma,
Yeah.
and she's a biochemist, I think, And he is.
Computer guy, the hardware guy.
Is he hardware?
Yeah, he's the one that had like the little flying scanner drone things and
I don't remember, but I remember. I know that she's the biochemist and he's probably the micro engineer. That's what it was. You're right.
he's the tech.
He's the engineer. So, but there's something else between those two that even unsaid, you can tell there's, I mean, and you, they stop several times and everyone just kind of looks at them and they kind of and then come out of the huddle. Okay, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, and
So.
like even when Grant first shows up, he's like, I'm supposed to, speak with Fitzsimmons. And he's like, she goes, he's Fitz, I'm Simmons. So
Yeah.
people even think of them as one person.
Yes. Yeah, and I kind of got that impression, and now that you say that, I'd missed that. You're right. That's exactly the way you think of them. That was what I was thinking of them as too, is just of one. But it's an interesting combination. So
Maybe they're twins or something, or I don't know.
I don't know.
Again, I'm not that familiar with Shield, so I'm sure they're characters from the comic. I just don't know anything about them, and I kind of like.
Maybe they're twins, maybe they're brother and sister, maybe they're husband and wife, but I don't think so with the funny miswording he had of talking to Sky.
Yeah, and I don't think they're married. I think they may be related in some way, brother and sister, or twins, or something like that, or maybe they've got some.
But see, he's Leon Fitz and she's Gemma Simmons.
Yeah,
So
but
if they all
she could have been married to somebody.
That's true.
Yeah,
That's true.
that's easy to
So,
explain, but yeah, I'm sure we'll find out. I could go look it up on like the Shield Wiki if I wanted to, and I'm sure it would tell me, but I would rather find out in the course of the series, to be honest.
yeah.
I don't like spoilers, and I think it'll play into the series nicely, discovering these characters as they intend for you to. That way, I'm
Yeah,
not
well,
spoiled.
I was very pleased all the way around with, and I wasn't really looking for this one to be an Avengers. I was looking for this to be a good introduction of a bunch of good characters. And I think they accomplished that. I think they introduced
Yeah, I mean they could,
enough questions to where it stays interesting.
and they couldn't have done any really big story in the pilot episode because you did have to introduce all of these characters. More than half of the episode really is just him bringing the team together. So, I didn't have a problem with it being a minor issue with the centipede thing, but that did also open up a larger can of worms for them to investigate as to, who's behind Centipede and where are they getting the drugs and the tech and all that kind of stuff. So it set
Well,
up for a nice series.
the centipede tech was left over from New York, right?
I believe so. It looked like the same kind of tech as the aliens, and they're
Which
using it to inject that drug from Iron Man 3, which I cannot remember the name of at the moment, but.
yeah, which makes you wonder if they're using it to inject the drug from Iron Man 3, is that drug related to that the race
Yeah, and
let's
I
came from? And because that came from the early From back in the 30s and 40s, and
Yeah, it's based on the super serum.
So if that's the case, maybe that was alien in the first place. And I mean, it really draws a big question mark around the whole story. But that is exactly what I guess my point was of going through each of these characters is that from every single one of them, they did a good job of introducing them, but then they did a good job of putting a bit of the unknown around them. And Coulson even, made the comment of, well, we're not a team, but I think we're in a position to do some good. I mean, his famous little saying. But in this place, I think he recreated that again. He's like a good football coach, If you got the right coach, he can put the right players together and they become more than the just the sum of all the players. They have a little bit of synergy. And I think he's done the same thing here. Other than his questionable methods with Sky,
They'll never find me. Oh, hi. Yeah.
that was awesome. That whole thing was awesome. But I think they had to do that in order to create her mystery background. That's why she wasn't already there and part of the team and everything.
Yep.
Because they wanted her to have that background. So I don't know. I've heard some, like I said, I've heard some bad things about it, but I really don't have anything bad to say about it.
No, I'm like I said, I enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent. I will definitely watch it next week when it comes out. What's it on, like Tuesday nights or something like that? Some silly weeknight like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. Well, I think that's for it all we can do for now.
Let's move on to
Let's
Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow. Now, two episodes have are out on that. Have you watched both of them?
I have watched both of them, so we will be spoilery.
We will be spoilery. Yes,
Have been warned,
absolutely. So,
listeners.
I Sleepy Hollow was one of those I really didn't even know was coming out.
Well, I did. And I was very, very worried about it because I've always been a fan of the Sleepy Hollow legend and the old Disney cartoon. I even liked the Johnny Depp movie that came out several years ago. So and when I saw they were going to make this modern day, and I kind of thought, oh, great, it's going to be like Elementary or some stupid thing like that. Where they try and update it to modern day, and I did not have any hope whatsoever for the series.
Did good.
And I kind of, I missed the first episode because I was out of town at a convention, and then the second one came on, and I didn't really have a whole lot of time because I was busy this week, but I watched both of them Friday night, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought they did a really good job with it. It's a the traditional fish out of water story. It's not like in Elementary or Sherlock for that matter, where it's Sherlock Holmes, modern day Sherlock Holmes, who grew up in modern day, and it's that this is his world. No, we have Ichabod Crane from the Revolutionary War sent forward 250 or resurrected 250 years in the future, so he knows nothing about our world and doesn't understand hardly anything that's going on. And I love those fish out of water stories like that.
Well, and what I thought was so entertaining about it was not only was it the fish out of water, but it was the history lessons that were given
Oh yeah, that was excellent.
during the episodes were just incredible. I mean, and they weren't little insignificant ones. They were, oh wow, that kind of puts things in
Yeah,
perspective.
they started the Revolutionary War over less than 2% tax, and she's paying 10% on donuts,
Yeah. He's like, people should go out in the streets
People should be in the streets rioting and Yeah, just little touches like that, and I like the twist where they made the Headless Horseman one of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and that's what this whole thing about stopping the the world from ending. It's not just about the Headless Horseman of Sleepy Hollow. He's
Right.
a larger cog than you thought he was from the old mythos. They've made him a much bigger component as far as things go, and set it up for, because I remember watching the pilot episode, the first episode of it, thinking this would make a really good,
Four or five parts
I
mini
would
series.
even give it like a 13 episode mini series. This would make an excellent mini series, but I can't see it going much further than that. And then in the end of the pilot episode, they basically tell you, yeah, we plan on running this for 7 years. And I'm like, really? But then by the end of the second episode, I was kind of thinking, yeah, okay, I could. The way they've set it up, it's kind of like supernatural, where they're going to have to go and fight all of these other demons and goblins and lesser.
Yeah, and you know they're going to be, the four main guys are going to be throwing different ones at them each time and each week, and it's going to become the monster of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Which.
It really is.
Yeah, a lot, some parts of it were incredibly cheesy, but it had that Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of cheese level to it, which I've been missing since Buffy the Vampire Slayer was canceled. So I think this will fit well into my TiVo viewing schedule.
But you know what and I have to agree with you. There were, I mean, talking about what's the character's name? The cop, it's Dunn, Andy Dunn.
Soup,
So his,
Star Trek, yeah.
So his, yeah. So John Chu, I guess, is his real name, but Andy Dunn, the character in the is a cop, and he basically gets, I don't know what happens to his neck. I don't know if they, bend him over like a Pez dispenser and his neck doesn't break and it just kind of stretches, or I have no idea what happens to it. But you're right. The cheese on that was just so incredible. I mean, there was a whole can of it being sprayed out, but at the same time, everything else was so well done that I'm not sure if they did it to prevent the blood. Because if you noticed, they were really, really careful not to have gore scenes. Even him climbing up out of the grave at the very beginning was very non.
Well, and I like some of the interesting camera perspectives they used in this. Like when the headless horseman takes off the minister's head, and the camera view becomes the minister's view, and you see the blade come right at the bottom of the screen, and there's a little splatter of blood in the lower left-hand corner of the screen, and then the camera just basically falls to the ground, which would be the priest's head. I loved that perspective that they did there.
Yeah. And they kept it all very, very sanitized, but they didn't do it in a way that harmed it. They did it in a way that added to the class, it added to the quality, I
But
thought.
exactly, and they even mentioned when the people were beheaded that the wounds were cauterized because the
Yes.
blade was red hot and just seared through the skin and sealed everything off. So I thought that was an interesting twist. And yeah, I liked the fact that they kept it relatively gore free. I mean, there's a little bit, and it's a little disturbing seeing the dude's head twisted all the yanked all the way back around the down his back. But dude, there
But
wasn't a lot of blood.
if that head had been snapped back like that in reality, there would have been lots of gore. There would have
Oh
been
yeah.
bones protruding. There would have been blood squirting. I mean, it would have been a big, disgusting mess.
Skin.
And I've got no problem with gore,
Well, I don't
but.
either, but it's a prime time network TV show, so they've got to keep it kind of limited. But yeah, I mean, honestly, if you'd stretched his neck that far beyond the bones and all that, the skin would have tore. Skin doesn't stretch that far. But it did give it that super cheese level that I liked in Buffy, so I really enjoyed that. I also liked another one of the camera perspectives I liked was when he first gets to Andy Dunn's character, when he first gets to his apartment, and he looks through the peephole, and then the camera view becomes the peephole as he swings the door in. You see the camera's in the peephole kind of thing, and that was interesting to me. And then of course the headless horseman's there with machine guns and shotguns and pistols and stuff all strapped all over him.
Now let's actually talk about that, because I heard some stuff last night at our sci-fi club that people were itching to talk about the machine gun that the headless horseman is carrying, and you and I both had a very similar perspective on it, and that was that the headless horseman isn't just the headless horseman. He is quote unquote death itself, and death is not subject to a war placed 100 years ago. It's all encompassing of time. Therefore, any machine that's there to kill is,
He's going to know how to operate it. Yeah,
yeah.
just instinctively.
So,
That's the way I looked at it. Was, it's a knife, it'll kill. It's a gun, it'll kill. He'll know how to kill you with whatever it is.
I didn't have a problem with it whatsoever. Now, I understand some people were, but I'm having a hard time even. Well, I guess I could argue their point if I wanted to, but I just didn't see it like that. I seen it as.
Well, I mean, I could argue their point if it was Ichabod. He would have no idea how to use a machine gun or what it was. He'd
Well, and
be able to
in
identify
fact,
that
he
it was.
didn't. He threw the gun down after he shot it
He
once.
would be able to identify, yes, it's a gun because it's obviously a gun type implement. But he would have no idea that it's a machine gun. It carries, 100 rounds or whatever it is, and can fire off, 60 rounds a minute or anything like that. He wouldn't understand that concept because he's used to muskets. You put a ball and some gunpowder in it, pull the trigger, and it's done.
Well, and that's exactly what happened to him. I mean,
Exactly.
she hands him a gun and says, "This is a gun." And he's like, "I know how to shoot a gun."
Yeah.
And then he shoots it once and throws it on the ground. And she says, "Well, what happened to the gun?" And he says, "I shot it. It was done." And he says, "But you didn't, It
He's like, it was empty. You only fart it once.
He's like, there's more in there. She's like, yeah, a whole lot more. And he goes, oh, well, that's new.
Yeah.
I mean, it was.
You know, I think they addressed that point because he is the fish out of water. The Headless Horseman is not. He is death incarnate. He knows how to kill people. That's his job.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. That was kind of the point of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people were just hung up on the fact that, oh, the Headless Horseman's from 250 years ago. He shouldn't know how to work that. No, he should.
And he shouldn't if he was just a headless horseman from 250 years ago, but he's not.
He's not. He's the embodiment of death itself.
Right.
So he's going to understand any implement designed for death. Or how to...
Now, I did have, and I hate to even bring it up because I'm not, I'll dismiss it as we go along, but I want to mention it now. I did have one problem with one character, Captain Frank Irving.
Yes, Orlando Jones.
He was very difficult for me to accept. Every time he got on the screen, it seemed like he was contradicting everything that was going on, and it was almost to the point where it was annoying. I mean, it was the cheese when Andy's head got snapped back. Okay, great, I can deal with cheese, but a captain who has filing cabinets full of things talking about it. And he's just in denial the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's more to the history, and I'm hoping that's what happens, is we find out that there's more to it, that maybe he's working for the bad guys, or maybe he's, you know, something along there. But I just had a hard time with his attitude towards everything. Even the time when even the simple little things didn't add up. So he walked into her when he almost caught her looking through the files. And he says, what are you doing? And she says, oh, I'm looking through files and trying to find. So instead of saying, oh, she's working overtime and stuff, he says, well, just let us do our job.
Mm-hmm.
Is she a cop? Isn't it their job?
Yeah. Well, I get the very distinct feeling that he knows more than he's letting on, that he's trying to hide something, that he's not really that clueless. He understands more of what's going on than he lets on. He's trying to keep it under wraps or something. Or it could be that he's working for the bad guys. I don't know, but there's definitely more to him than they let on in those first two episodes. Because, I mean,
yeah, there's got to be something there. And then he just disappeared.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he was.
And there's even a couple points where he says, you know, you two seem to be the only ones that know what's going on. Get out there and get me some answers. And then, you know.
And then at every turn she tries to do something, he ties her hands. Yeah, that was the problem that I had with it. It was kind of like, well, you know. Captain, he was with me the whole time. It couldn't be him. I don't care. Take him to the asylum anyway. To hell with him. You know, it was kind of that attitude that just kind of caught me off guard. I was like, why? And it's one of those things kind of like, you know, when, you know, with other shows, it's like, I wonder why they even bother putting that kind of stuff in when if they had just left it out, the story was good enough without it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I've got to think there's something more to that.
But that said, that was very minor. It was very, he participated enough to where you didn't say, okay, there's something wrong here. But it was enough to where it annoyed me. Every time you seen him on screen, you're like, oh God, what is he going to do stupid this time? You know? And there's always that one thorn in the side in a series, but usually they're fairly realistic. His arguments were just asinine. I mean, there just was no other word for it.
Okay, so what about the demon that, you know, snaps Andy's snaps Andy's neck and then resurrects him, basically? What'd you think of the way they did the demon?
Well, and this kind of goes back to the other thing. I mean, the demon goes in there, he snaps his neck, and I don't know. I kind of thought, well. I don't know. That was so strange that he would, you know, that he came in from. Here's what I don't understand is mm-hmm. that whole scene and then playing it back in the video room and stuff like that. It just there, it wasn't convincing that that Captain didn't know what was going on. I'm just not convinced, and that's what kind of leads me to believe that there's got to be more there because that whole scene, none of it made any sense. Yeah, they showed him replaying it, but did they show who opened the gate to the cell? Did they show the mirror breaking with no one touching it? Did they?
Well, no,
I mean, there
in the
was a.
video, the mirror broke when Andy hit it, which is not what,
Which
Ichabod
is not what
and
happened.
Abby saw. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, what I really like just the way
He
they're
hit his head,
portraying,
that's right.
the way they're portraying the demon, where, when the visuals they're doing for it, you never actually get a good, clear
Ever
look
get to
at it.
see him.
Even when it's right there, there's this haze around it to where you can't really get any detail. You can see kind of the basic shape, and it's got the horns and all that, but that's the best you ever get. I like the way they're handling that.
Yeah, he flickers and flutters and sometimes he can, almost teleports, Yeah, he almost teleports. I want to say he almost blinks like in StarCraft 2. They had the too many games, I guess. But yeah, no, you're right. I think I think at times it was a little frustrating, but I think for the most part, I think you're right. I think they did a good job of kind of keeping him hidden. And but is he one of the was that demon one of the four?
No, he's one of the ones that's trying to summon them. So he's like in charge of a lot of these. He's the one bringing the army up that's supposed to bring the horsemen out. He's
Ah.
basically orchestrating the apocalypse. That was the impression I got. And then they specifically said that he's one of the beings trying to summon the horsemen.
So no, I'm okay with that. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, I didn't feel like you did that I actually particularly liked it a super lot, but I didn't dislike it.
I found I like it when they try to keep
A little
a little
mystery about
mystery,
it.
yeah, a little, keep it in the dark and don't show us every detail of the bad guy and all that kind of stuff, to where I'm sure eventually we'll probably get a proper good look at him, but I'm hoping that's like, a season or two down the road, or they finally defeat that guy and then another one comes up,
Well, and he kind of has a familiar look to him.
Oh yeah,
And
I'm
I
sure.
don't know from where or whatever, but he's kind of got that familiar look to him already.
He's got that traditional, tall, thin demon with big horns on his head kind of look to him, like the demons at the end of Doom, the big bads at the end of that and stuff,
Yeah.
the hell beasts or whatever they called him in there. But yeah, so he's fairly archetypal as far as it goes when you come to demons and stuff. I like the fact that they're keeping his exact appearance a mystery from us at this point, where you just kind of get glimpses of him and everything's blurred out and in shadows and he moves real fast, you don't get a good look and that kind of stuff.
Now let's talk about the two primary characters. I mean, I liked the way that Ichabod handled Abby being black. That was just so that was so classic and so she handled it well. And I think the acting's really good. And it's
I thought they both did excellent jobs with their parts. But yeah, that scene where she comes to the jail cell and he's like, "I hope you're emancipated." Said, "Excuse me?"
You see this gun?
Authorized to use it on you. But yeah, that was a nice little scene. Yeah, I think the dude, Tom Misson, I think that's how you pronounce his name, that's playing Ichabod. I think he did an excellent job with the part in that. And well, like in the second episode where they're running from the witch in the sewers basically, and he throws that torch into the gunpowder crates. And it kind of snuffs out at first. He's like, "What? Oh, come on."
Now, the association between the two of them, I mean, he implied, I guess, at the end of the first episode that it was going to go on for 7 years, but that they were the quote unquote two.
Because she had
But
already seen the demon previous
she had already seen the
little.
demon, and she's got a sister,
Yeah.
Jenny,
Who's still.
her
Yeah,
sister.
he's still visiting her, so.
But here's the thing, on, and this is kind of this is kind of using the internet to my advantage here, but IMDb shows that, you know, they've recorded 6 episodes of both Ichabod and Abby being in all 6, but they show her sister being in 4 of them. And the previews kind of alluded to the fact that she was going to be included in the next episode. So the only thing I can think of is they're going to get her out. And I don't know how that falls into the two.
I don't know. Like I said, obviously from what the scene we saw in the last episode there, the demon's been visiting her. So I don't know that she'll exactly be a good guy or sane enough to help them a whole lot, at least not initially. So I don't know how that'll play out, but that'll be an interesting one to watch. I love the credits here on IMDb. It's got Rob Cobell as 1700 town folk in 2 episodes.
Rob Cadell as
He's credited as 1700 town folk. This Rob Cobell is a busy, busy man.
yeah, they use the cut and paste in Photoshop. I don't know. I think they've done a good job on this one too of creating good, believable characters that you want to watch each week to find out what's going to happen next, especially Tom, though. I mean, he is really, really good. Not anything against Nicole or Abby or whatever her name is, but I think that Ichabod is just a really well played, and it'll be interesting to see if they can keep that up. You know, if they keep the him stumbling over current items and things, and because I love the little post-it signs and the
Yeah. The post-it.
press this for coffee
Yeah.
and I brought you donut holes. I don't want donut holes. A few minutes later, holy crap, these are good.
Yeah. Turn for hot water, turn for cold water. Little post-its everywhere through the hotel room. That was a nice little scene. So yeah, and they're obviously having fun with it because they're doing things like the sticky notes and having fun with the musical choices in the episodes. You know,
Yeah.
the Rolling Stones, you know, please allow me to introduce myself. I never can remember the name of that, but yeah, that song and, you know, the one when the witch first shows up. They're having some fun they're trying to be serious with the series, but they're also having a lot of fun with it. And I think that's important when you're trying to pull off a show like this. Because you can either go super serious or you can just go off the wall nutso. And they're driving a fine line down the middle of those two.
Yeah, no, they did, and the association with the Sheriff Corbin,
Clancy Brown, yeah.
yeah, so him getting whacked so early on.
Yeah, I kind of expected that. I was hoping he'd be in the series more often because he's an excellent actor.
Well, he's already come back once as a
Yeah,
vision,
flat
so.
and stuff like that. So I imagine he'll show up periodically as voiceovers when they're like listening to the tapes and stuff, or reading his records, or his flashbacks and premonitions and things like that. So I'm sure he'll be in sporadically, which should be kind of cool because Clancy Brown is an excellent actor. So I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, they axed him pretty early.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we will, I guess kind of that's it, really.
Yeah,
What is there?
good
What's
show.
this there?
I'll keep watching it.
No, definitely a good show. I mean, I think they've got two good hits this year, which is kind of rare because, and now the question will really be on this one is how long can they maintain it? How long can they keep it going? Can they make it stay interesting long enough to, you know, to go from one season to the next? Because one season on this one at this point, I think would be an easy give me.
Yeah, I think he's a season. I don't know about the 7 they're hoping for, but
I don't know, but you know, I would have said the same thing about Buffy when it started.
Well, that's true
And
too.
then, you know, it turned out being pretty decent. So I think that if they can come up with a good demon monster character of each week, then I think it'll actually be fairly entertaining, as long as it doesn't just get, you know, too repetitive. It's, you know, the same thing. The bad guy shows up, the bad guy gets his butt kicked, they celebrate, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, I think it could easily go one or two seasons. I'll have to give it a few more episodes before I see if they can sustain the level on it to justify more than that. But I think it's got good potential. And I was, like I said, I did not have any hope for this series at all when I first saw the commercials. I just thought, oh man, it's gonna be another one of those. But I
Yeah.
really enjoyed it. It was fun.
Nope, so did I. I think we got two winners here, so I'll continue watching both of them. And I guess we will, I guess our next podcast is going to be about shows over the last few years that we've either missed or that are over that you should have watched or and we should have watched and so on and so forth. So,
Yep.
all right. I guess that's it for this one. This was what was this? Podcast 118.
118.
And we will see everybody next time and say goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please visit our home on the web at scififx.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at scififx, and we are on Facebook at facebook.com/scififx. Like us on Facebook, it's an easy way to be kept up to date with all the latest sci-fi news, and you'll be entered to win a free prize. You can also stream our podcast using Stitcher Smart Radio on any mobile device with an internet connection running on iOS, Android, webOS, or on BlackBerry smartphones. Follow the Fellowship of the Geeks on Twitter at Fellowship Geeks. Check out Geekdom Nation on the web at geekdomnation.com, and follow Geekdom Nation on Twitter at Geekdom Nation.